You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rhino the Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We were just listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band doing Hot Texas from our friend Alex Dormont, and this is, well, not a repeat, but we tried to do this show a few weeks ago when the LA fires, so we got the fellas back.
So we have them back, and we are delighted that you are joining us tonight for episode 121, and have we got a full house. Let's find out, who are these guys joining us tonight?
Good question.
Henry Park comes on. This is the first Thursday of the month, and of course, Henry's always with us. Hello, Henry.
Howdy.
And then we have, who's our next?
We have Bill Markley.
Bill Markley, and here comes Bill in the white hat. Howdy, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
And
next is Kellen Cutsford.
And here's Kellen, and we love.
There we go. Look out.
And if you are listening to us and you're not watching, Bill is in a white hat, and Mr. Kellen is in a black hat, and Henry's without a hat, as are we. And we are ready for a really, really fun night. Let's get to know these folks a little bit, though. We're going to start. Just, Kellen, where are you joining us from?
I'm joining you from Littleton, Colorado. And Littleton is just, most folks associate right near Columbine High School. So most folks know that's in the mind. But yes, that's where I am.
Okay. And he is one of the co-authors of the two books that I'm holding up. So we'll go to Bill Markley. And Bill, where are you joining us from?
Yes, I'm here in, sunny South Dakota, Pierre, South Dakota. It's the capital of the state. And if you've never been here, come on up. It's the weather's fine.
Hey.
And the two books that these gentlemen wrote together, Old West Showdown, two authors wrangle over the truth about the mythic Old West. And we'll be talking about one of the chapters from this book, and Standoff at High Noon, another battle over the truth of the mythic Old West. And before we get to battling, we're going to welcome Mr. Henry C. Park, who is with us the first Thursday of every month. He is the film editor for True West Magazine and the author of, Henry, what's the name of your book?
I believe it's called The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them.
Very good.
Very good. Ding, ding, ding. He wins.
Okay.
So, Henry, why don't you start
us off
with your monthly roundup?
Well, I'll tell you now, the big Western news story for nearly a month now is the tremendous success of the Netflix miniseries American Primeval. It premiered on January 9th and 6 days later had 10.4 million views. Mm. It's on the Netflix top 10 list here and 75 other countries. Betty Gilpin from GLOW stars as a mother traveling west with her young son to join her husband and finding a world of trouble between outlaws, natives, and Mormons. Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights is her reluctant guide. It's 6 episodes. Have you all seen any of it?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Good, good.
Okay, good.
We could debate that film.
Yeah, Brigham Young doesn't get the best review in that film.
Well, it's very in your face violent. Mm-hmm. They don't go away; they go for a close up for every throat slitting and scalping. I enjoyed it. It's very exciting. The realism of the battle scenes puts you right there to an amazing degree. I would say the history is good for a docudrama, and I'm dying to hear what you guess, your guests think of it, because it's set against the Mountain Meadows Massacre, which is very controversial among historians to this day. True West editor and publisher Bob Bosvell and I are taking a deep dive into this. The core of the story is the relationship between two legendary figures, Brigham Young, played by Kim Coates, and Jim Bridger, played by Shea Whigham. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to them and to Mark L. Smith, who wrote the show and also scripted The Revenant, and to their native cultural consultant and to the spokespeople for the Church of Latter-day Saints, because it's all about the slaughter of 120 people on a wagon train by Mormons. And it's a historic fact. Mm-hmm. Is, did Brigham Young do everything he could to prevent it, or did he order it?
Mm.
Now, I'm delighted to tell you that an excellent Australian Western from 2021, which was unavailable in the United States until now, is now included on Amazon Prime. It goes under two different titles, The Legend of Molly Johnson and The Drover's Wife. And it's based on an 1890 story by Aussie writer Harry Lawson. It's about a pregnant mother and her child alone on her farm in the outback awaiting her husband's return. That's starting to sound like the other movie. Well, stars and is written and directed by Leah Purcell, and it's a knockout. I had a great interviewer with her a couple of years ago, but I never ran it because the movie never played in the U.S., but now I'll be running it in Henry's Western Roundup. A couple of weeks ago, Claude Jarman Jr. died at age 90. He was the 12-year-old Nashville schoolboy who was cast opposite Gregory Peck and Jane Wyman and a fawn, 1946 as The Yearling. He went on to do about a dozen movies, mostly Westerns, playing John Wayne and Moreno Harris' son in Rio Grande. But he was not crazy about acting, quit, and later had a very successful career running the San Francisco Film Festival for 20 years. He wrote his autobiography, My Life and the Final Days of Hollywood, which I highly recommend. A couple of years ago, I got to interview him on stage at the Lone Pine Film Festival after a screening of my favorite of his films, Roughshod, with Robert Sterling and Gloria Graham. That interview is featured in the current Henry's Western Roundup, or rather it will be when Blogger starts working again for me. I've been trying to post it for a week. And you can read all about this and so much more at Henry's Western. I have to stop saying www, right? Henry's Western blogspot.com.
Yay, Henry. Gentlemen, do either one of you want to make a comment about the movie that he just asked if, you know, you had anything you'd like to say about it that you both seen this year?
This would be something Kellen and I would both agree on. They played fast and loose with history on this thing.
They did.
You know, when they say based on a true story, that's about where it ends with this story. I was.
Well, my thing was, you know, they're covering the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and one of the major players is John D. Lee, and who eventually was the only person executed for what happened at the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And he was nowhere to be found in the film. He's instrumental in that story because it's what he said in his recollections before he was executed that led to the belief that Brigham Young was a culprit behind that he had ordered the murder of the people, and of course then other people would say John D. Lee was the sacrificial lamb. He was thrown under the bus to sort of make things right and let's move on sort of thing. So I was interested that he was not, that when they started out with Mountain Meadows Massacre, which you're right is very controversial even today in Mormon history. He was nowhere to be found. So I was kind of surprised at that.
I think the other thing is there were no adults that survived the massacre. All adults were killed. And they just let children that were, I think, under the age of 8 live because they thought they would, their recollection of the massacre would, you know, fade away after a while. They farmed out the kids to Mormon families. But later on, some of the kids had memories of, you know, the Indians going to the creek and washing off the war paint, and lo and behold, they're white men, you know. So they play fast and loose in the history. Jim Bridger wasn't even around when that had happened. The Mormons had already ran him out of his fort. And the fort was burnt down, you know, when the army was advancing on Salt Lake City, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm a bad person to take to the movies. My wife was muttering under my breath. Look, they've got the wrong saddles. That's another thing. They had the wrong type of saddle in that film, too. So don't ever take me to the movies with you.
Well, I should have mentioned, too, that for context, John D. Lee was basically in the Mormon hierarchy. So he was seen as one of the upper in command. And so he was many believe, was used as a scapegoat after the massacre happened. And so, that's what my big surprise was. Who's going to be John D. Lee? And then he's not even there. So,
Wow.
But, other than all that, it was a fine movie.
Well, I like good old violence, don't get me wrong. So I like Westerns, so of course.
What did you want to say, Henry?
I said, I think I asked the right guys the question.
you did.
I think you did.
And by the way, Henry's book is a great book. I love it.
Here we go. I'll hold it up again. Yes, the greatest Westerns ever made and the people who made them. And you wanted to say something about True West?
Well, I did. You know, it always is we have a bookmark missing. And I always find that in this magazine, when I don't have the bookmark in, I can never find what I want to find. Now, your article in here, you had a couple articles in here. But one of them I want to ask you about was this woman who was a mixed martial artist.
And
and she made that movie, low budget movie. And did you want to say anything about that? Because I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, Cynthia Rothrock has been a big female martial arts star in movies for like 30 years, and she wanted to make her own movie, and she wanted to make a Western, and so she made this film, Black Creek. And it's a really surprisingly elegantly done Western. It's I think it was like $750,000 budget, shot in 12 days.
Wow.
And it looks terrific. But one of the curious things is that apparently everyone in the Old West knew martial arts, because she has cast it with every like major living martial arts star, and so I'm forgetting the name of one of the stars that said to her, by the way, was it true that they all knew all of this stuff? And she said, well, sure, the Chinese all came here for the gold rush, and they taught everyone martial arts.
Yeah, she said that.
You heard it here first.
kind of goofy and out there in all of that element, but it's really a nicely done picture, and I do highly recommend it. Right. We call it best movie screen for the year, to stream, excuse me.
I used to pick up her old straight to video martial arts films when I was a kid. When they used to have the video store, I'll date myself. Yeah. We go to the video store and you pick up a Chuck Norris movie and a Cynthia Rothrock movie or a Seagal movie and a whatever. But yeah, hers she was a staple in that genre.
We're going to kind of shift gears just a little bit, gentlemen. This is kind of to both Kellen and Bill. So how did you meet, and then how did you get the idea to put these books together? Tell us the backstory.
I can tell how it came about, but Kellen, I don't know. It seems like I've always known you.
It's been a while, hasn't it, Bill? I think we both, I'm trying to think, Bill, first at a WWA, or if we met first on the posse ride?
No, WWA.
WWA.
And I think you'd come in to talk to us about, was on the board at the time.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
We're endeavoring. Okay. He came in to talk about some, I don't know, something technical.
Yeah. running Twitter, which is now X, but formerly Twitter. And that's right. And me basically taking it over. And I think, Bill, it just so happened that you were meeting Denver. So it's all pre-pandemic. So before everybody would just Zoom meet now, but they would actually get together. And I think everybody flew into Denver, wasn't it?
Right.
And so I live in Littleton. So I'm just about a half hour, 40 minutes from downtown Denver. And so I came in and everybody had a meal. And I just talked about restarting their Twitter channel and our page. And of course, now it's X. So I run their X page now. And that's where we met. I forgot about that. Good memory, Bill.
Yeah. We can collaborate together and figure these things out. So the book, many years later, after Kellen and I had met, I was my wife and I were driving across Nebraska, kind of from one end to the other. And Chris Entz was along with us. And I think most everybody, you folks all know her. And as the miles went by, Chris and I were talking. We got on the subject of Cattle Kate, who was the only woman who was ever hanged in the state of Wyoming. And the big ranchers said that she was hanged because she was trading cattle for sexual favors. And I said to Chris, well, that's not right. They wanted they just wanted access to her water, and she wouldn't give it to them. So they got her out of the way. And we started going back and forth about, you know, who was right, who wasn't. All of a sudden, you know, it's like one of those cartoons, the light bulb came on. I don't know, over whose head, maybe both of our heads at the same time. We thought, hey, what a great idea for a book. You know, one person tells one side of the story, the other person tells the other side of the story. Chris couldn't make it, and Kellen stepped in and took over. And he's done a marvelous job. I mean, we've done two books back and forth doing this. And we'll talk about it later, but we've got a third one on the way.
Oh,
and it just happens. Yeah. One of the chapters in that book is going to be the Mountain Meadow Massacre. So, you hit the nerve right there. So, I don't know, Kellen, maybe you want to tell them how the book's structured then.
It's sort of a hired gun kind of deal here, where Chris is always so busy. I think she writes 40 books a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And so she said, well, hey, you know, and actually Bill came up to me. And so then we started talking about it, and we said, well, how are we going to structure these? And so we just came up with the basic outline, which was, okay, we'll have a just the facts. So everything that most historians and everyone agrees on, you know, Civil War ended in 1865, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we line those out, whatever we're covering. And then one of the two of us takes one side and the other takes the other. And we will switch. I won't always go first, and Bill won't always go last, and vice versa. And then one of us will write the just the facts, and then the other will take another chapter and he'll write just the facts. So we did it back and forth, and we thought, okay, 10 chapters. We wanted to make it palatable for people, so it wouldn't be, you know, this overwhelming tome that nobody wanted to read. We wanted it to be fun, and because that's the whole style of it, is fun. And then we get to duke it out. And then I think at one, you know, we felt, well, whatever you're passionate about, then that's the one you go for. And then there were other ones that we were less passionate about. You know, it was kind of like a 50-50 sort of thing. And we said, okay, well, I don't think it gives any way of our secret recipe, but some of it was a coin flip. So.
Yeah, or horse trading, like, you know, Kellen really wanted to do the good side of Buffalo Bill. So,
exactly.
So then I would get something that I really wanted to do. And sometimes we both just wanted to do the same side. And we had, like he said, we had to flip a coin or whatever. You know,
yeah.
But
worth trading.
Even though we might take a side that we don't particularly believe in, we try to write it in a way that the people that do believe that side of the story are justified by it. And we provide our sources, and we have endnotes and So people can then go follow up on their own if they want and do a deep dive.
Yes. The books are very engaging reading. And if you think you know a little bit about something, I can tell you, if you read the chapter on that subject, you'll discover that there's a whole lot you didn't know, or you'll wonder, why didn't they include the thing that you thought you knew?
Yeah. Good point. Try to spur you on to read more. That's the
spur you on, absolutely, to read more.
We're going to assume that later when you give your addresses on where to find you, that you're going to get a few comments.
send your comment too, and you should have a placard to write, you know, hold up and say.
We'll give them Henry's email.
Yeah, exactly. Did you, so when you, the person who wrote the facts part, did the other person, when you reviewed it, did you find that you wanted some things changed in that facts part, or did you pretty much just go, all right, he's writing the facts part and I'm going to let that go?
No, we review each other's stuff all the way through. And in fact, we collaborate. Like, you know, if I find something that's going to help Kellen's side, I don't withhold it. I give it to him. And, you know, vice versa, you know, just because we want to make, again, we want to present both sides and let people make up their minds, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. Henry, you said something, I missed you. What'd you say?
What kind of a lawyer are you? That's
not Did you have anything you want to ask before we take our first short break? Because when we come back, we're going to get into it.
No, I just said, you know, Henry, you know, when we get into each one of the two sections that we're going to talk about, then we're going to expect you to come up with the best movies. And there's going to be several movies about both of these stories. So you can kind of chime in what you think is the best and what was the worst.
Or the worst, or just the most entertaining. We are going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we will be talking about one of the hottest topics found in these books, The Gunfight at the OK Corral. One of the topics from the Old West. I want to hold up the right book, Showdown. Mm-hmm. But first, here is a word about two of our sponsors that make Rendezvous with a Writer possible. And if you are a writer, you want to find out what the Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison can do for you. And we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. And we have Henry Park, Cullen Cutsforth, and Bill Markley. And we're going to be talking about The Gunfight at the OK Corral. Yes. And we've got some difference of opinion here.
Yeah.
You fellas want to take over?
Who wants to start?
Well, who wants to get out of the chute here? I mean, I'll go ahead and go first.
Yeah, why don't you go first and then I can tear apart what you
said. Okay, so I come out right out of the gate.
So Kellen in the black hat.
That's right. I should be the villain. But I know who the good guys are, and the good guys are the Earps. And so Gunfight at the OK Corral, I think most folks are familiar at least with that. I mean, it's in the lexicon. It's in our national consciousness. Wyatt Earp and his brothers Morgan and Virgil and Doc Holliday, right, met at the OK Corral, and they took on the Clanton brothers and they took on the McLowry brothers in what has basically become the most famous gunfight in the history of the Old West. There might be some debate, but I really don't think there is. I think that it's one of the most well-known. Henry can certainly tell us how many movies have been made about the gunfight at the OK Corral and all the events surrounding it, the events that followed afterwards with the Vendetta Ride and the death of Morgan Earp and the injuring of Virgil and then Doc Holliday's his life. So it's one of the most famous moments in American history and definitely in the history of the Old West. And that's why we led off with it in our first book, Old West Showdown. It's our first chapter right out of the gate. And so my side is the Earps were the good guys at the gunfight at the OK Corral. little background. What led to the gunfight at the OK Corral? The McLowry brothers, along with the Clantons, along with many other individuals, were in a gang called the Cowboys, and the Cowboys were rustlers, and they were thieves. And a main sticking point that led to the gunfight was a stagecoach carrying about $26,000 bullion was hijacked by Cowboys Luther King, Bill Leonard, Harry the Kid Head, and Jim Crane. And they robbed the stagecoach and they murdered the stage driver. And when that happened, Sheriff Behan, who was the head of or the sheriff of Cochise County at the time, deputized Wyatt, Morgan, and Virgil, and they set out to arrest those cowboys. They caught Luther King, and Behan was going to take King back to the jail while the Earp brothers set out to find the rest of the cowboys. Behan was known to be an absolute shill for the cowboys. He was very friendly with them. He liked them. And so Luther King somehow escaped. And this made Wyatt Earp very mad. This enraged him that they let a killer go and they let a thief go. And so Wyatt set out to replace Behan in the next election. And so that's when all this starts, because a man named Ike Clanton, who was at the gunfight, and you probably know him from most of the movies. He's a character that shows up quite a bit. Ike said that he would let Wyatt know where the other cowboys were hiding out if Wyatt would allow him to collect the rewards that were on those guys' heads. Right. So they hatched this plot, and Wyatt thought, yeah, I can do that. When I capture them, I can use that against Behan, and I'll win the election and take him out as sheriff. Well, that didn't happen because some other savory characters caught up with those guys who robbed the stagecoach, and they killed those guys who robbed the stagecoach. So all bets were off. Ike Clanton got upset because he thought that Wyatt was going to squeal and tell the other cowboys of their deal and what had happened. And he began threatening the Earps, all the Earps. And Doc Holliday was not one to really take threats lying down. They started to get into a fight. Back and forth they went. And then eventually the Earps were going to confront the Clantons, and the McLowrys happened to be there with them. And that's when the gunfight ensued. And the good guys won.
This is based on a true story.
Based on a true story.
Yeah, Henry's applauding too. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Bill, how do you answer all that?
Well, first of all, it wasn't the gunfight at the OK Corral, it was the gunfight back behind the OK Corral. But true. That's just kind of a little minor point. The main thing is that, Ike Clanton was in town, and so was Tom McLowry. They come in to, for some deals with beef and that sort of thing in town. And the night before the gunfight, Ike got a little drunk. He got a little mouthy. In fact, the Earps beat him up a couple of times, and they played cards together a couple of times during the night. So there was a lot going on back behind the scene. They took Ike before a judge after, you know, beating him up. And Tom came by to see how Ike was doing, and Wyatt went and pistol whipped him in the street in front of people. And so there were those things going on behind the scenes. And so Frank McLowry and Billy Clanton, they come riding into town together, go to a bar, and they learn at the bar that, you know, Ike was in trouble. And before they even drank their drinks, they said, "We've got to get them out of town." So they went out, they found Ike and Tom, and Ike was getting his team hitched up to his wagon. They're getting ready to leave town. In fact, Ike didn't have his, you know, they had taken Ike's weapons away, and Tom didn't have his weapons. So when they were down back behind the OK Corral getting ready to leave, Ike didn't have a weapon. Tom didn't have a weapon. Billy had a weapon, and Frank had a weapon. And so the ERPs say, okay, we're going to go down there and disarm those guys. Well, one of the interesting aspects of the ordinance in town, you weren't supposed to carry a weapon in town. Mm-hmm. But one of the aspects of that ordinance was, if you're leaving town, you're allowed to have a weapon. And these guys were clearly leaving town. They're hitching up the wagon. They're getting out of there. I mean, Ike was already beat up. Tom was beat up. They just wanted to get out of town. And so the ERPs come marching down with Holiday. And Holiday was given a shotgun by, Virgil gave him, or Morgan. One of them gave him a shotgun. They get down there, and Holiday also had a pistol on him. And so when they get down there, there are plenty of witnesses, because they held an inquiry afterwards. There are plenty of witnesses that said that Doc Holiday fired the first shot, and then Morgan fired, and then the rest of the ERPs started firing into, and Billy had his hands up. Tom had his hands up, and Ike had his hands up as they started shooting. And so, of course, Frank goes for his gun, and Billy goes for his gun after he'd been hit by Holiday. And, you know, the rest is history. They get killed. I mean, Ike doesn't get killed. He's the only one that doesn't get killed. He runs up to Wyatt, who sticks a gun in his belly, and he points it away from him. He's going, you know, I'm not here to fight. And he runs off, and he's the only one that doesn't die. So they were trying to get out of town. I'm not saying they were good guys. Yeah, I mean, who is? No one's perfect. But yes, they
did. Say the least.
Yeah, but these guys, they didn't deserve to be, you know, murdered in the streets.
Oh.
That's how one of the headlines of one of the newspapers said, murdered in the streets. And their funerals was one of the biggest funerals ever held in Tombstone at the time. So my side of the story is, and I want to say too, is when I first started out on this, I'm going, oh no, I have to take the Clanton and McLowry side. How did I get stuck with this? But the more I researched, the more I figured, you know what? These guys are just trying to get out of town.
Okay, so Kellen, back to you.
There are other witnesses who said it was Billy who shot first, and he drew down and he tried to shoot Wyatt. And Wyatt turned and he fired on Frank, because Frank was a known gun hand, and Wyatt was smart, and he knew if we get killed, or if someone's going to draw on us and be a good shot, it's probably going to be Frank first. So Wyatt drew on Frank, but Billy fired first. And some things that films often do in some of the films that do get right is that many witnesses said Wyatt, before the fighting started, said, "Oh my God," or "Oh God," that he knew it was going down, and that Billy pulled his gun and fired on Wyatt, but he was not as steady. He was the youngest of the group. He had the least amount of experience. And he missed Wyatt, and Wyatt turned and fired on Frank, because Frank was the deadliest of the group.
Well,
And so
I list witnesses in here that said that Holiday shot first. So
and I list it in there that in the inquest, what happened at the end of the inquest? How did that come out? They go to trial, did they? Did they find it that the Earps were guilty and go to trial? No, they didn't. They didn't, because Ike was a big fat liar on during the inquest.
Because the judge was friends with the Earps.
It all starts with Ike. Ike is the biggest loudmouth, and he starts everything. He got his buddies killed. He got his brother killed. Mm-hmm. Because he couldn't keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
And when it went down, and you know it's true, Bill, he's right, he didn't have a weapon. And they didn't kill him. And what did that sniveling sneak do? He ran up to Wyatt and he said, "Oh, please don't kill me." And Wyatt said, "Get to fighting or get away." And that is true. That many witnesses said, he said, "Get to fighting or get away." Right. And Ike took off. Now, in some of the movies like Tombstone or whatever, Ike comes back and tries to get a gun, shoot him at that. Ike took off. Ike ran with his tail in between his legs down the street.
I have a question. So how many seconds did that gunfight last?
Oh, gosh.
30 seconds.
I was going to say, I didn't know it's half a minute or something.
Half a minute?
That. Yeah.
Henry, what did the movie show?
They showed that, about... It seemed to take longer on the screen. They said that it took about half a minute. You know, as far as best or more most accurate movies about the OK Corral, you know, almost all of them spring from Stuart Lake's book, which was dictated by Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp.
So you
in
do
our
get,
book, it says 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
30 seconds.
This is the truth in this book. Yeah.
Yeah. My side, not Bill's.
Okay. And then my other question, because the image is so strong. So, did they walk down the street together four across as they were heading for that spot behind the OK Corral? Is that how they showed up there? It is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We can agree on that. Yes.
Yes. That's true. And I believe it is also true that there was a fire that someone was trying to put out at the time too. I believe that is accurate as well as I think a boarding house or something had caught on fire.
Okay.
Bill is right. It was not in the corral. It's not.
Yeah, it was not. Okay. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
We have to go back to Henry now to ask him which one he liked the best.
Okay. Well, my darling Clementine. Fond as Wyatt and Victor Mature as Doc, I think is the best movie, but not the most accurate. The earlier Alan Dwan version, Frontier Marshal, with Randolph Scott as Wyatt and Cesar Romero as Doc, is excellent. Gunfight at the OK Corral with Frankie Lane singing, John Sturges directing, Burt Lancaster as Wyatt and Kirk Douglas as Doc is also very fine. The Costner film, Wyatt Earp, is a good biography of Wyatt. But the Tombstone telling of the gunfight, I think, is better. Costner's film focuses so much on Earp that you can't tell who the other characters are supposed to be.
I agree with that.
I think Tombstone is more effective as an ensemble story. But they're still all for the point of view of Wyatt Earp through Stuart Lake, which is why I recommend looking at Tombstone Rashomon from Alex, which is a crazy film, but it's really interesting. The premise is that a traveling news team comes to Tombstone to cover the gunfight, but arrives a day late and tries to reconstruct what happened by interviewing the survivors. And they show the gunfight like four or five times as different people described it.
Wow.
And it's a very interesting picture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm not going to be anybody's Huckleberry.
We need to move on because
we have another exciting dialogue coming up. So we're going to break away and we're going to go and hear from another one of our sponsors, OutWestShop.com. And when we come back, we're going to find out who are those guys and what happened to them. Stay tuned.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods, We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Monday with the Writer. Okay, we've got Henry Park here. We got Bill Markley. We got Kellen Cutsforth. And
we got white hat, black hat, and no hat.
We're after Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
Where are they?
Yeah, so that next one we're going to talk about is a chapter out of Standoff at High Noon. So, gentlemen, did they die in Bolivia? Who wants to go first?
You got the floor, Billy.
Okay. So, we've all seen the movie, hopefully. Great movie. I love the movie. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. So this was one of those topics where I drew the short straw, where I was going to have to defend the side that they did not die in Bolivia. And I thought, oh, this is great. So the more I delved into it, the more I thought, as you said, hey, wait a minute, who are those guys? Because the people that were shot up in Bolivia were never identified. So hopefully most people here that are listening to this know about Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, how, you know, they were members of the Wild Bunch. They were successful robbers of, banks and trains. In fact, a lot of the, there's a lot of robberies that are attributed to them, but it's never really been established whether they did do it or not. As time went on, things got kind of hot for Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and Sundance Kid's girlfriend, possible wife, Etta Place. And they moved to Argentina. At the time, this was taking place around the early 1900s. They moved down there. They were in Argentina in 1908. That's when, I'm sorry, I got my figures wrong. It was 1905 is when they basically left Argentina. But then they'd been there for several years as successful ranchers and farmers in the area. And they're very well liked by everybody. But the Pinkertons tracked them down. And they sold their holdings and they went over to Chile. They were there for a while. And then they kind of disappear from the scene. There were reports that they were still robbing banks now again in South America, and as I said, they slowly fade from history. Well, there's two North Americans. There were a lot of a lot of people didn't realize. I didn't realize this until I started studying it. There were a lot of North Americans in South America at that time. There was a lot of mines going on. Bolivia had mines, and there were two North Americans that were hired by this Bolivian mine and worked there for a while. And those two guys later on held up a payroll going to a mine when they did this on November 4th, 1908. Well, those two guys raced away from the scene of the crime. They went to a small town called San Vicente, which was approximately 30 miles from the scene of the crime. They turn up there 2 days later. They get a room in town. They start acting kind of suspicious. And the local policeman, I'm paraphrasing a lot of things right now, but suspected them. Got a couple of soldiers, went up, and these guys started firing and killed one of the soldiers. They had him surrounded. It wasn't like in the movie where there was like a whole regiment surrounding them. It was just a few soldiers, cops. And the one guy gets wounded, and then the other guy gets wounded, and the one guy shoots the one in the head and then commits suicide. The end of those two people. They come in, they look through their bodies. There's absolutely no identification that it's Butch Cassidy's Sundance Kid. Nothing. There's no identification on these two guys. So even to this day, the official reports are that they were unknown characters. They did have business cards on them, but they were business cards of other people at that time. So they weren't their own business cards. The Pinkertons were still after Butch and Sundance. There were sightings after this incident at San Vicente. The Pinkertons were still after them. They tracked them down into Paris. They followed them down into southern France, and then they lose. So the Pinkertons were still after them. Now, the story that Butch and Sundance died at San Vicente, that came out in Elks Magazine, April 1930. And it was written by a guy named Arthur Chapman, who corresponded with a guy named Percy Siebert, who was the mine manager where the alleged Butch and Sundance worked at. And he said that these two guys that were killed were Butch and Sundance. But he was never at the site. He never really talked to anybody that was at the site. Everybody that was at that site at the time said, we don't know who these two North Americans are. And they said at one time, one of them they thought might have been an Argentine, but never identified as Butch and Sundance.
We have like 3 minutes left to the show. Can you believe that?
Okay, sorry.
Liar. Those guys who died in San Vicente were Butch and Sundance, and that's the end of it. That was
read all about it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh my gosh, this is so much fun. Right. So I'm going to get together with both of you in scheduling. We need to have you come back maybe in the fall, September or something, because there is so much to talk about. And Henry, wouldn't that be fun?
Absolutely. Love to.
Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get together with schedules. I want to be sure everybody has a chance to say where our audience can find you, and besides bookshop.org, where they can get your books and such. So Henry, we'll start with you.
Okay. You can get The Greatest Westerns Ever Made, The People Who Made It, which is from Two Dot. And you can get that at any fine book published dealer. And of course, I'm in True West every issue, and I write articles for the INSP all the time. They're blog. And find me in Henry's Western Roundup.
Fabulous. Okay, Mr. Kellen, I'm so sorry we kind of shortchanged you there. Tell us where we can find you. Wrong.
I'm right. That's all that matters. So you can find
me. Story.
You can find me. I write the Techno Savvy column in Western Writers of America's Roundup magazine. You can also find me on X at Western_Writers. I run the Western Writers X page, and you can also find me on Facebook. Just look for Kellen Cutsforth. It's a very unique name, so you're not going to get a lot of people under that. And of course, you can find my books, same as Henry said, in all where all fine books are sold. And of course, on Amazon, if you just look under Kellen Cutsforth, you'll find me there.
All right. Mr. Bill Markley, what about you?
Sure. Yes, you can find my books on any internet bookstore, or you can order them through your local bookstore, which I would recommend. Support our local bookstores.
Yep.
And I write a column for Roundup Magazine also called Wild Bill's Wild West, which can be any wild topic. I also write for Cowboy State Daily. It's a Wyoming paper. I've got a book coming out. It's going to be in the fall on Jim Bridger, which covers all kinds of things, including the Mountain Meadow Massacre and the burning of his fort. And I try to tell the true history of Bridger. And he was an amazing character. So, and I got to throw a plug in for Kellen and I. We're coming out with a third standoff book, and we're going to cover the Mountain Meadows Massacre.
We will.
On that. So,
Next week, please come back and join us. We have two authors that'll be with us. Catherine Brown Ramsberger returns with her book, A Thousand Flying Things, and she'll actually will be with her, but she'll be hosting a really good friend of hers. This book is also an amazing read, California Sister, written by Gloria Mattinoni, and they will be with us next week. You have a quick quote?
We have two, but we're going to do one.
Yeah, because we're like out of time, Mr. Sam. Hopefully, I'll let us.
We've been kidding around for the 69 film, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Who are those guys?
They're right here, and they're going to be back. Thank you so much for being with us. See you down the trail.
Thank you.
Hey.